This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
FBI Director James Comey fired yesterday. We'll find out why on The Patriot Preacher. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to The Patriot Preacher, covering the news from a Christian perspective. As always, I'm Caleb Cockwood. We've got my assistant Joe Marcus over there running the board this morning, so we're good to go. We're set, and I do apologize for that teaser. If you're wondering why I had that pause and reset, I guess Donald Jenkins doesn't hear very well, because when I spoke into the microphone, oh my gosh, it was so loud. It was cranked up all the way to about 7 or 8. I'm usually on about a 2.5.
And for some reason, I had mine cranked up too. I don't know. Was yours affecting mine? I guess not.
No, I don't think it was. Yeah, maybe Kevin just had his up. Yeah.
You saw me genuflect or whatever. I mean, I said, oh, right. What is this?
I said a couple words and it just blew my eardrums out. But anyway.
That's kind of esoteric stuff behind the scenes, but
right, but I think that it's almost appropriate. Obviously, I didn't want it to happen, but that's kind of what's happened in the news, is that we've had this sudden blowout of noise after the firing of FBI Director James Comey. So I think it's almost appropriate that that happened. For those of you who are unaware, if you happen to live under a rock, James Comey, the FBI director, has been fired by President Donald Trump. Now, I think it's important to understand the timeline, exactly what led up to this, and we've talked about this many times. I've probably talked about James Comey more than any other local host, just because I find the case itself fascinating. I think that in a lot of ways, both in the media and just in the public, that he has been made out to be this nefarious figure that I don't think that he is. But nonetheless, the way that he found out that he was being fired was apparently, according to reports, he found out on a TV broadcast and then was handed his letter of dismissal a little bit later, which is a terrible way to fire anybody. I mean, you should let them know first, let them prepare, give them some notice, and then have them walk away. You don't issue a letter, let it get out into the media that he's being fired. Now, I don't know, maybe there was a leak, maybe it was something the Trump administration had no control over. I'm really not sure. That's a possibility, but either way, I think that they should take precautions to try to keep someone, to allow someone to be notified that they're being let go before, and that doesn't matter, because I happen to like James Comey. I think he's been mischaracterized, but even if that were not the case, if this were somebody that I absolutely despised, if Stephen K. Bannon, for example, who I've been incredibly critical of since the moment he came onto the campaign, if they were firing him and he found out on a TV broadcast and then got his letter of dismissal later, I would say that's wrong. That's the wrong way to handle it. I don't care who the person is. So just a minor note there. And I know that especially with this program, this radio station, there's an awful lot of bosses, an awful lot of business owners out there. Please, for the sake of civility, let your employees know one-on-one that they're being let go before they find out about it around the office or through some other medium. Just let them know ahead of time. I know that the vast majority of you out there are good people that would handle it that way, and I know that that's generally the case, but it's just common courtesy to do that when you're terminating somebody. Now, getting to the firing itself, Trump issued the termination letter, and it was interesting, and this is the line that everybody's talking about in the media, that right around the end of it, he says, "I appreciate that you've 3 times confirmed to me that I was not under investigation." And so one of the things that was brought up the other night when I was watching the coverage, which I thought was very noteworthy, Greg Gutfeld, one of the Fox News contributors on The Five, he brought up, he says, it kind of sounded like a breakup letter. He was talking about, yeah, you know how we've talked about I'm not under investigation those 3 times? Yeah, we've had some good times. It's been great, but I'm going to have to let you go. You're no longer suitable for the job of the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigations. So it was kind of funny. If you think about it, it was worded kind of like a breakup letter, almost like almost like Trump was saying, well, it's not you, it's me, but really it's you, and then letting him go. So a little bit of comedy there. Now, the rumor is, and I know with rumors, that's the thing about rumors, they don't always work out, but the rumor is that the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein was the one who recommended it. Stein. I think it's Rosenstein. Anyway, the new Deputy Attorney General, he's only been at the job for a little while. He joined up. He is now the second in command, as it were, right under Attorney General Jeff Sessions, which personally I'm glad that Jeff Sessions was not the one that recommended this if it turns out that this rumor is true. Because if it is true, you have to keep in mind, Jeff Sessions has already recused himself in all matters dealing with the Russian investigation, whether or not there was collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. So it's a very good thing that it wasn't Jeff Sessions who did this. And so Rod Rosenstein apparently recommended it. That's what several people are reporting. We'll have to wait a little while to fact check that, make sure that it is accurate. But if that is the case, it also opens up a new line of thinking, which is a lot of people are accusing President Trump of trying to fire Jim Comey because he was leading the Russian investigation. Now, it's possible. We're going to talk about the implications of that here in a second. And frankly, the timing does look suspicious. I'll be the first to admit that. However, and I do want us to consider this and consider it carefully, when we're talking about James Comey and everything that's been going on with that particular investigation, if it turns out that recommendation for his termination came from Rod Rosenstein, then it definitely doesn't alleviate Trump of any suspicion, but it certainly goes a long way in, because if it was just Donald Trump, if this was just his idea and he's the one that went ahead and got rid of Comey and he waited so long to do it, that's one thing. But waiting for somebody credible outside of the administration that has recently come in to say that James Comey, especially the Deputy Attorney General, coming in and saying, hey, we want to recommend that this guy be terminated, that lends some credibility to the idea that Trump's not just doing this because he doesn't like James Comey. So I think that goes a long way. I think that was a smart move. If Trump had been gunning, and we don't know this, if Trump had been gunning for Comey's job, then this was the right time to do it, because he waited for a recommendation of someone who was an outsider, who was not with the Trump people beforehand, coming in, making this recommendation, and then Trump going ahead and following through. Because you have to keep in mind, in this particular instance, Rod Rosenstein is essentially the attorney general in all matters regarding the Trump campaign investigation. And so it's appropriate, if he's the one who recommended this, that he was, it's appropriate that that was his call, and that Trump just rubber stamped it when it came to his desk. So just some things to think about, hopefully putting it in the right context. We're going to talk about the reactions of the media, the fallout, what all's going on in Washington. We'll get to that and your phone calls. We've got one on the board, 860-1440, two lines still open. We'll be back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We all agree in the obligation of the moral principles of Jesus, and nowhere will they be found delivered in greater purity than in his discourses. Thomas Jefferson.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers, and we have a couple lines open. If you want to call, let me know what you're thinking about this. We're going to go to the phones in just a second, but before we do, I want to tell you about an event going on tonight at the Montgomery Biscuits. They're having a giant crawfish boil where you have crawfish, corn, potatoes, you know, pretty standard stuff for a crawfish boil. It's $30 for a game ticket and all-you-can-eat crawfish. If you already have a ticket, then it's just $20 for the all-you-can-eat crawfish, which is a great deal. Eat as much as you want. Will be served family style behind the club car bar.
I know where that is.
Yeah, family style. So I guess people are just going to be standing around judging you, or how?
No, I'm kidding.
pregame music from singer-songwriter Ziggy Lewis. Normal $2 fear food beer coupons for military personnel, as always, on Wednesday night. So, and that will be a game between the Biscuits and the Chattanooga Lookout. So they lost it yesterday. We need to go ahead and get it back today.
Bring that up. That was bad. I'm going to be there tonight, and I don't know how many. Well, what was it yesterday? We talked about the pronunciation, crawfish, and you said, well, it's an insect.
Right. We should just call it bug. But anyway, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Average Joe on line one. What's on your mind this morning, Average Joe?
It's a crustacea, but that's not what I called. hey, did you actually check on the Affordable Health Care Act and Congress being part of it?
Actually, I did, and it turns out you were right. So I did. I did double check on it, and I appreciate you bringing that to my attention.
Great. Just want to try to be clear. I was listening to an interview just this morning Anderson Cooper had with Kellyanne Conway talking about Comey's dismissal, and she referred to I think it was who you're talking about. I don't think she mentioned it by name, but she said that assistant or deputy attorney general had written either a memo or a letter to Trump, and that he had just been confirmed 14 days ago.
Right.
And that he had issued, because Anderson Cooper was asking, why did Trump fire Comey now when he had praised him as a candidate about investigating Hillary's emails, and why did he fire him now when this and I hadn't actually read what came out about him being wrong about the emails, but she did repeatedly say that the guy that you're referring to was a huge factor in his dismissal.
You know, I find that very easy to believe. There are people on two theories on that, if that turns out to be the case, and it looks like that it is. I mean, we're seeing evidence of that mount up more and more, not only with people inside the Trump administration, but people outside that have contacts there. So what I think is that probably did happen. And if we're looking at it and looking at it objectively, there are really two schools of thought on this. One is that Trump has been wanting to get rid of Comey for a really long time. He was waiting for an opportune moment, and having somebody that was not inside the Trump campaign coming forward recommending it was the perfect opportunity, which, if that's the case, I would agree. Now, the other school of thought is that Trump essentially ordered the new guy to recommend that, and because he was trying to get rid of Comey anyway. Now, I don't know if that's the case. Right now, we have no evidence for it, so we kind of have to just go with what we know. And if that's the case, if Rod Rosenstein is the one who recommended it, I think that does give a little cloud and a little it staves off some liability from Donald Trump himself.
Well, Anderson Cooper is giving her a hard time talking about you. I mean, he actually said that you make no sense in your comments and that. But I think her point was mm-hmm. is that Trump the candidate is different than Trump the president. You know, when you're a candidate, you might have one list of concerns or one point of view, but now that you're the president, you have your perspective has changed. And I think that could be a valid point in his dismissal.
Well, the thing you're talking about, Average Joe, is, and this actually happens, it's happened more with Donald Trump than previous presidents, but to a certain extent that happens to every single president. Because you keep in mind, one big example that I could give here is President Obama talking about how we need to be out of overseas contingencies, or whatever we were calling them, wars essentially is what they were. We should be getting out of other countries, we should be pulling our troops back home. And then when he got in office, I mean, he made some strides on pulling people out of Iraq, but by and large, we were still in a lot of the same places that we were when he started his presidency. And so you do have a little bit of that. The candidate and the president, once they get in there and they know everything the previous president knew, they might make decisions a little closer to what their predecessor would have made. But in Donald Trump's case, it seems that that happens more often than not. And so it is a little confusing, and I think that not only just professional political commentators like me, but the average folks just looking into this, and maybe you're in this camp too, you do kind of stand there scratching your head wondering how Donald Trump can be this different on the campaign trail, praising James Comey, saying he's got guts, and then all of a sudden firing him a few months later. So I think that there's a reason to be a little confused about that. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it myself.
Well, I think you bring up a good point, and I think I have great respect for people that when they say one thing and then they learn the facts and the entire facts, and and we've seen this in presidents, and they've been criticized about being wishy-washy, and other people that when Trump not being a real politician, not maybe not knowing everything, I think that as much as I'm not a Trump supporter, I wish him the best, and I want him to do a good job, and I want the, for the country's sake, but I have a respect for him, and when he looks at things and says, you know, I might have said this, but this is actually the best thing we should be doing now based on all the information I have as the president, and based on all the advisors that I have advising me. And when you look at particularly military matters, when you have the military advising you, and it's not just the people that you surround yourself with, there are other people, you know, they again have great respect for people that can say, hey, I was wrong before, and now I'm gonna change my opinion based on the information I have.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it. Thank you so much, Average Joe, for your call. I appreciate it. Yeah, I absolutely agree. Couldn't agree more that I do have a respect for people that can learn something new. There have been several reversals on Trump's policies that I've really been fond of, the way he's done an about-face when it comes to NATO and some of the things that he was talking about when it came to foreign policy that he's reversed. I've actually been a big fan of. In some cases, it's not been the case. There's been some reversals that he actually, I thought he made sense on the campaign trail, and now I think it was a mistake to reverse those policies. So, you know, you have it both ways with Donald Trump.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I respect someone who can admit they are wrong and then they reverse their opinion for the right reasons, but you don't. But I guess what I'm thinking here is maybe that really wasn't why he did it. Maybe he wasn't willing to admit he was wrong. He just suddenly felt that this was punitive action that he had to take, or action to protect or cover his butt.
See, and that's the question we have to ask now. And it's a good point to bring up. That's the question we have to ask now, because now we're asking why. Mm-hmm. We already know what happened. We know the facts. We know a lot of the facts. I wouldn't say we know all of them, but we know what happened. We're looking at this in retrospect now. Now we have to figure out why. And once we can determine the motivation, why Donald Trump did what he did, whether this was an aha moment where he was like, oh, I was wrong and I need to correct this, or whether there was some other motivation. And that's the question that I'm going to try to answer when we come back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. Call in 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. Now, I did want to bring this up right before we go back to the phones. I was sitting here thinking about all this, and I had an epiphany on who James Comey is. And if you're a fan of the show, How I Met Your Mother, you're going to probably catch this pretty quickly. If not, I'm just going to do a little setup for you. James Comey is Gary Blauman. And I know most of you who aren't fans of the show are thinking, well, who is Gary Blauman?
Mm-hmm.
It's one particular episode of How I Met Your Mother. I think it's like the third or fourth to the last, so very, very late in the series. They introduce this character called Gary Blauman. And the thing is, he's at a wedding, and he is a guest that one of the characters wanted there, the other character that's getting married didn't want there. And so there's this divide over Gary Blauman and him being at the wedding. And every time a new character finds out that Gary Blauman is at the wedding, they do this real dramatic anticipation and attention-drawing thing where they zoom in on their face and they have a pause there as to how you're going to react to Gary Blauman. And so one character will go, "I," and then they play the music and zoom in real close on their face, "love Gary Blauman." And with James Comey, that's essentially the way it was, depending on who you ask and what day of the week it was. You would have senators, congressmen, people at the FBI, political pundits, whoever they were, because James Comey had done so many things to where he had become either the hero or the villain of one party or the other, and he had gone back and forth between those two roles so many times. It was kind of like being Gary Blauman. You would even have them do silly things like, I think it was with Wayne Brady's character, they zoom in and they would make the pause longer and they would stop the music and they would pick it back up to kind of keep the anticipation going. And he would go, I hate that I ever thought that I loved Gary Blauman. And so it just that's kind of the way it was with James Comey. Pretty much everybody had sort of a love-hate relationship with James Comey. They loved him at one time, they hate him now, or vice versa, and that had changed four or five times. And so it's really interesting. This goes all the way back to the George W. Bush era, because James Comey was one of the ones spearheading an investigation into George W. Bush, and kind of went against the grain, went against his own bosses when it came to that and looking into it. And so he became a hero to the left because of that. That's how he wound up getting in the position that he was with the Obama administration. Then, of course, the Obama people didn't like him afterward. And so he just switched with this so many times that he became almost and I'm not saying this to degrade James Comey. Like I said, personally, I think that he was done a disservice by being fired. But at the same time, he had become this very divisive figure. And I think that was the best way I could sort of describe it and explain it. So let's go to the phones and see what some of you have to say. Let's go to Simpler Days on line one. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing quite well. What's on your mind, sir?
A couple of quick things. One, I think he should have been fired a long time ago. I think he lost his credibility. I think he was part of collusion with the meeting on the tarmac, and all of that went on.
Well, now I do have to correct you on that, because actually the reason that James Comey, and we know this from records that were reported by the New York Times, not exactly a conservative news source, afterward, the meeting on the tarmac is actually what caused James Comey to believe that Loretta Lynch had been compromised, and that's part of the reason he took sort of the lone wolf strategy that he did. So the meeting on the tarmac, not only was he not involved, he was skeptical of it, and that's the reason that he was suspect of Loretta Lynch for the rest of her time in office.
Yeah, but he said that nobody would prosecute that case, and you had U.S. attorneys all over this country said that there was enough evidence there to prosecute 10 people. So I just believe he was part of that whole deal, and I think he was tarnished. And that's the life of a political appointee, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like quarterback, you know, when you win, but they can come in and they can get rid of you. And, you know, we're talking about how people are fired, how people are let go, Caleb. I mean, in 40 plus years of work experience, I've seen a lot of people fired. You know, and if you ever ask anybody that got fired, it doesn't feel good. It's like a slap in the face. There's no pleasant way to do it. But I think one of the worst firings I've ever seen was the one here locally with our former police chief. He had buried his brother 2 days before. He had been given bereavement leave by the mayor, and while he was on bereavement leave in Louisiana, they decided to lock his office down and fire him. I think you talk about one of the worst deals. That was, to me, was one of the worst.
Yeah, finding out that you've been fired by watching it on the evening news is a cakewalk compared to that. That's unconscionable. I don't even see how another human being treats somebody like that, much less an employee and employer.
But that's my views for today, Caleb.
All right. Thank you so much, Simpler Days. Now, what Simpler Days was referencing, and I was actually about to get into this, so I'm glad that he brought it up. What he was referencing, that meeting on the tarmac, is just 3 days after that happened, James Comey's direct boss, Loretta Lynch, the Attorney General of the United States, appointed by President Obama, and she is in charge of the FBI. She met with former President Bill Clinton 3 days before they announced no charges are going to be brought before Hillary Clinton. Now, that is by far the biggest problem that I have with James Comey, and I make no bones about that. I think that I'm trying to get into his head. This is based on the stuff that I've read, his records, his correspondence that the New York Times dug up, looking at it through the timeline, the decision he made in October, whatnot. I think that he was, when he recommended no charges be brought, he did it in such a way, he essentially laid out the case for someone to bring charges against her. I mean, that was a scathing press conference that he had when he said that we're not recommending charges, because everything he said leading up to that about her being careless, about her endangering the country, about there being confidential files, in some cases of the highest level of confidentiality, being brought up. I mean, anybody could prosecute that case. And he said, but we're not recommending charges be brought forward. I'm not sure exactly why that was the case. Maybe, and I know I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt here, so take this with a grain of salt, but maybe what he was trying to do, and again, I'm not saying this makes it right, but maybe what he was trying to do was say, we're not going to recommend charges, but essentially laying out the evidence for someone else to. Because he didn't think that charges would be brought and you would get a fair shake with Loretta Lynch in office.
Is there a possibility that, and I, devil's advocate, I don't like people playing devil's advocate, but I'm going to do, is it possible, though, that maybe they did this innocently, the meeting on the plane and all, that, you know, it's so obvious. I mean, why would anybody with, you know, a brain in their head do something so blatantly untoward? Why, it just doesn't make sense. Like, maybe it was all innocent. Maybe they, as I say, I'm playing devil's advocate. I'm not sure. Of course, well, I'm not. Nobody is sure.
Here's the thing. It is possible. I never ruled it out, but you have a mountain of circumstantial evidence that suggests that it wasn't. I mean, for Pete's sake, the director of the FBI thought that that was enough to say, yeah, she's crooked. Yeah, she's in the bag for Hillary Clinton when that happened. And on top of that, you know, maybe it was innocent. Maybe that's all they talked about. But anybody, like, I'll use your phrase, with a brain in their head should have known that looks bad and we probably shouldn't do it. And the second that that happened, if Loretta Lynch had any sense of character or justice in her body, she would have come out afterward and said, I'm sorry, I screwed up. From here on out, I recuse myself in all matters regarding Hillary Clinton's investigation. See, I would have had some respect for her on that.
You know what it comes down to? If this were a criminal case and we had a jury.
Well, it was a criminal investigation, not a criminal case.
But I'm just the analogy. If,
right.
if. And you had to make a decision or you had to convict or acquit or whatever beyond a reasonable doubt, there certainly is reasonable doubt there as if that meeting, that wasn't really even clandestine, the meeting on the plane, there is reasonable doubt that it was innocuous and that it was nothing really untoward about it.
But part of the reason...
A reasonable doubt.
Part of the reason that we don't know what they talked about is because they had all security and staffers clear the area before they spoke, which is suspicious in and of itself. They made sure that there were no witnesses to their conversation. And that alone, the fact that there aren't any witnesses, should bring suspect anybody. Because if they're just talking about their grandkids, which is what they had said was the topic of conversation for that 20 minutes on that tarmac, then why did they feel that they had to get rid of their security to do that? I mean, I assume that the security people wouldn't have minded knowing that. And so that's part of the reason that I think that this stinks to high heaven. Now, it's important to understand where this is going. And before we go to a break, I am going to mention one of our great sponsors, Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. Now, they're down there on the Troy Highway. They've been in business here in Montgomery for over 50 years. Great people, great service. You could not ask for a better mechanic. And as Jerry Seinfeld once said, do you have any idea how important it is to have a good mechanic? Yeah. And so Jerry Seinfeld, a little wisdom from him on this Wednesday. It's important to understand that when you're looking for a mechanic, I mean, that's a big part of your life because they're taking care of something that's a huge investment for you, probably your second biggest investment other than your house. And you wouldn't leave your house to someone you don't trust. You shouldn't do that with your car either. So go down to Jim Whittam Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. Any problems that you have, they can either fix or recommend somebody that can. They'll get you back on the road as quickly as humanly possible, and they'll do it at a fair price. So they're the only mechanics that I use, Jim Whittam Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. Check them out on the Troy Highway today. Now, when we get back, we're going to lay out what to expect going forward with James Comey, what's going to happen, the reactions from different people that you're going to hear, all that when we come back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Governments could not give the rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and the Lord of all the earth, General John Dickinson, signer of the Constitution.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440. and NewsRadio1440.com. Speaking of patriotism, join the Prattville Patriots Pro Developmental Team for their next home game this Saturday, May the 13th at Stanley Jensen Stadium in Prattville as they take on the Metro Atlanta Horsemen. Game time is going to be 6 p.m., so be sure to check that out. Now, I guess.
What is their logo?
I have no idea.
A chest.
All right, so getting back to what we were talking about with the FBI, the firing of Director James Comey, I wanted to get into exactly what's going to happen, the results that we're going to see. What to expect. You're going to see Republicans now savaging Comey, talking about what a bad guy he is, praising Trump for this decision, which they're going to say is bipartisan, that there's agreement, which to a degree, they're right. Remember, just in the last segment, we talked about the Gary Blauman effect, that it seemed like everybody that you talked to about James Comey, it was a coin toss whether or not they liked him or didn't like him. So there is going to be some Democrats, several Democrats that come out and say, well, yes, James Comey should be fired, but he should have been fired back in January if Trump had a problem with him. Why is he getting fired now? I don't know. And there is some reason to be suspicious of the timing. I'll be the first to admit that. And I think that needs to be looked into. But at the same time, and I think that this is an important point to bring in here, when you're looking at the Democrats, they would have been critical of Trump's decision to fire Comey regardless of when it happened. If this had happened in January, which is what most of them are saying should have happened right now, they would have been critical of that too. They're critical of every single thing the man does. And I understand why people who are Trump fans, not being one myself, get so frustrated with them, because it seems like, I think Charles Krauthammer put it best last night in his coverage. He said, if Mount St. Helens erupted today, the Democrats would want an independent investigation as to how Trump caused it. And there's some truth to that, because every single little thing that happens within the Trump administration, it's the worst thing that's ever happened, and it proves that Trump's crooked. I mean, I'm not even a big Trump fan, and I've been pretty vocal about that, but the man's not responsible for every bad thing that happens, and there can't be a demon under every single rock. Now, maybe this is one of those cases. Maybe there is something suspicious going on. I'm not saying that there's not. All I'm saying is we need to step back, take a deep breath, and then look at the facts and wait for them to come out before we start saying definitely which way this is going to go. So that's the first thing to expect. You're going to see Republicans and Democrats fighting over this. You're going to see them savaging. You're going to see Republicans savaging Comey, saying he was the worst person ever. And here's another thing, and this is going to tick the Democrats off, but it's what's going to happen. I've already seen it happen with a couple of the political commentators from last night. What they're going to start saying is that, well, they thought Comey should have been fired for the thing that happened with Hillary Clinton. And they're pushing that line because they think it lends them credibility. Now, there may be a few people out there that are being genuine about that. I don't know. But the vast majority of conservatives, I won't even say conservatives, Republicans that were looking into this, that were commentating on it, that talked about it, they didn't really have a problem with James Comey opening up the investigation 11 days before the election when it happened. In fact, a lot of them were praising him for it. Now, I understand that you didn't like that he didn't recommend charges, because I'm in that boat too. I think he was wrong for doing that. But at the same time, when we're looking at this from that perspective, Republicans are going to be pretending that they always thought that was a bad deal, that they always thought that James Comey made the wrong call on that, and they're going to be using that as the excuse. We'll see how benevolent Donald Trump is. Now he's trying to do the right thing and correct a wrong. Yeah, Donald Trump was not real gung-ho about doing that right after that happened. And so I understand the Democrats' frustration with the Republicans when they start saying that, because now all of a sudden the Republicans are going to pretend like they've cared about that all along when they weren't. None of them were talking about it beforehand. And so there might be a handful of people that are sincere in that, but the vast majority of the Republicans, be they elected officials, political commentators, whatever, they're going to essentially being pretending and trying to sell the narrative that they cared about the way he handled the Hillary Clinton case in regards to opening up the investigation 11 days before the election. They're going to say that they cared about that and thought that was wrong all along, even though none of them have talked about it before. So you're going to see that too. You're going to see the Democrats making him into a victim. Oddly enough, even though the Democrats have absolutely despised Comey, talked about how he's what cost them the election. You're going to see a lot of Democrats making him out to be a victim in Big Bad Trump came down and fired him just because he was investigating him. So you're going to see Democrats making that case. And like I said, it looks suspicious, but my reason for saying that is different than the Democrats. I'm not trying to win political points. In fact, Chuck Schumer has already come out and said that Trump has some kind of nefarious ulterior motive for making this decision. When it comes to Chuck Schumer, I genuinely believe that if Donald Trump came out tomorrow and, you know, say we're living in an alternate world, and he started saying to Congress that we need to pass single-payer health care for the entire country, government-run health care, and all of the Republicans signed on to it, he got the bill passed, and we had single-payer in America, somehow Chuck Schumer would make it into the worst idea ever. It blows my mind how Schumer and the other Democrats, it doesn't matter what Trump does, it's always the worst thing that's ever happened. And that's why I think they lose a lot of credibility with the average American, is because they can see through it and there's no consistency there. There's no consistency with Chuck Schumer or the rest of the Democrats when it comes to Donald Trump, even though he has advocated many of the policies, much to my chagrin, that the Democrats like. They still hate the man. And so it doesn't really matter what he does. Like I said, with the James Comey thing, they were going to be critical of that regardless.
May I play now, my Obama card real quick? They said the same thing about him.
That's true. But there was a lot of that on the right as well. But my guess is the Democrats will be calling for an independent investigation and a special prosecutor. They are meeting probably as we speak. I know that the meeting was set for some time this morning. I don't think that they nailed it down last I saw. But they may be meeting right now as we speak, looking into having a special prosecutor and an independent investigation. Honestly, at this point, I think it makes sense. I would advocate for that, even though it's the Democrats' idea. And if Donald Trump has nothing to hide and he needs to throw this into an investigation and then all this goes away and then they look foolish for pursuing it. Politically, Donald Trump can be a big winner here. Hour 2 coming next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
The Democrats are now calling for an investigation into James Comey, and they're citing past experience as their reason. What's their case? We'll talk about that on The Patriot Preacher. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Hour 2 of The Patriot Preacher is on right now. Now, I'm doing something that I rarely, if ever, do on the show. It does not happen all that often, but I'm actually going to jump hours with the same subject because, frankly, I think it's that important. I think that it is this important because we have to know that our intelligence community, the people that are holding the people that we elect to office accountable, are honest, that they're unbiased. And in my opinion, James Comey was one of those people that, and he wound up losing his job. And I hate to see that. I know that there's a lot of strong opinions on him one way or the other, but I'm going to try to do my best to give you the information that I have, give you my opinion, and then let you decide for yourself. Now, looking specifically at what's going to happen here, and the Democrats are already trying to make their case for this being some kind of nefarious plot by the Trump administration to get rid of James Comey because he was investigating and looking into the Trump campaign's collusion between them and Russia. Now, Chuck Schumer, as we pointed out right before the break, and he's calling the Democrats to a meeting today. We're not sure about the subject matter of this meeting, but everybody is suspecting that it's probably going to be to call for a special prosecutor and an independent investigation into the FBI matter and into the collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign. Now, here's the thing. It's important to understand this because when people hear that, they think, well, Donald Trump's under investigation. Technically, Donald Trump is not under investigation. Technically, his campaign is. Now, of course, Trump being a major part of that campaign, there is a possibility that when looking into this, that campaign, if we find out that they were colluding with Russia, that leads directly up to Donald Trump. But there's also a chance that it won't. There are certain people that we know had connections to Russia: Paul Manafort, Stephen K. Bannon, Michael Flynn. And so we're aware of some connections there. We're aware of some of the things that are going on. And so it's important to understand the difference in those two. So from a political standpoint, if Trump goes along with the Democrats, if they call for a special prosecutor, as long as Trump's not colluded himself, that's gold. All he has to do is come out and say, yeah, I think the Democrats have a point, and I want this to be as unbiased as possible. I want it to be as clean and transparent as possible. So we're going to go ahead and launch that investigation with a special prosecutor. I don't want any favoritism here. If he does that and they come back with no evidence that he's colluded, well, the Democrats are probably still going to be pushing that narrative that the Republicans, or sorry, that the Russians were trying to help the Republicans win the election. But the thing is, if they do that and they're continuing to push that narrative, frankly, they look stupid. And if Trump comes back clean, he looks like a hero and a genius. So for those of you who are Trump fans and want there to not be anything here, as long as Trump didn't collude with Russia, and thus far we have no evidence to suggest that he did, we have evidence that his campaign did, but not Donald Trump himself. And so if that is the case and he has nothing to hide, there's no collusion between him and the Russians, which so far, again, no evidence points towards that, then they look dumb for continuing that narrative. Now, Democrats are now making the case that Trump has a pattern of doing this. One of the things that Elizabeth Warren brought up the other night is Sally Yates, who was the acting attorney general when she was fired, that she was fired because she refused to carry out the orders that Donald Trump gave her as the acting attorney general. To which I responded, well, duh. Is there a job in the country, government or not, where disobeying your boss's orders is not a fireable offense? Because I'm pretty sure if the vice president up here at Cumulus or the program director told me to do something, I said, no, I'm not going to do it, I would get fired. And there's no injustice going on there. So, and she wasn't even a political appointee. She was somebody that was filling in until Jeff Sessions was confirmed as the attorney general. So they're trying to make that into, they're trying to bring that up again, make that into Donald Trump just firing people because he doesn't like them. No, Donald Trump fired her because she refused to do what he told her to do, and he's her boss, which is grounds for firing no matter where you work or what your job is. Now, they're also trying to say that he should abolish the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, I don't want to get into all the rigmarole there because there's an awful lot to talk about, but he can abolish the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and he may wind up doing it because he feels personally slighted. I think he should abolish the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, but that's not why. They have the second highest rate of having decisions overturned by the Supreme Court of the United States. The only one that has more is the Federal Circuit, which takes far less cases. Over 80% of the decisions that they go, the cases that are heard by the Supreme Court, wind up getting overturned. And on top of that, logistically, the Ninth Circuit is too big. It covers too much ground. There's too much of a population within their district. And so I think you should abolish the Ninth Circuit and replace it with two different circuits. So from a logistics standpoint, it makes sense to abolish the Ninth Circuit. Just because Donald Trump said it doesn't make it crazy. I'm sorry, Democrats, that's not how this works. But when you're talking about the Ninth Circuit, if he does it because he feels personally slighted, he's doing it for the wrong reasons. But I do think that the Ninth Circuit being abolished and then being brought back as two separate circuit courts would not be a bad idea. There's a lot of legal scholars that have advocated for that long before Trump was even thought of. So anyway, so now they're saying that the third example of this is ousting Comey for saying he wouldn't rule out the possibility to look into Trump himself. Because just a couple days ago, they were asking him the question, well, would you rule out the possibility that Donald Trump himself has colluded with the Russians? And he essentially said, well, if that's where the investigation leads, that's where it leads. Well, yeah, but that's what any investigation should be. You lead where the evidence takes you. You make decisions based on the evidence that's put in front of your face. I don't think that's unreasonable. Maybe it's possible. Again, it looks suspicious, and I think it's worth looking into, that was the reason that Donald Trump fired James Comey. But we don't know that yet. And so it's important to keep that in mind, that when we're looking into this, it's never a good idea to make assumptions before the evidence. It's okay to have suspicion. It's okay to act on that suspicion if you're looking for the truth. But if you've decided that the guy's already guilty, you've decided this is already what happened before you even start, like the Democrats have with Trump, then it's impossible to be objective at that point. I think a special prosecutor would be a great idea, and especially if Trump himself is not colluded with the Russians, which so far we don't have any evidence to suggest, that Donald Trump winds up walking away from that looking like a genius and the Democrats look stupid for pursuing it for so long. So politically, I think it's a smart move for Trump to make. Now, getting to the really my take on this, and it looks like we've got some callers interested in this. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in on this yourself. We will talk about this here in a second, but when it comes to really where I am in this and what I think about it, Comey made a massive, massive mistake in not recommending charges for Hillary Clinton. Whether or not his motivation was hoping that somebody else would make that case or whether a different agency would look into it and find something, I don't know. I can't look into the man's heart. Based on some of the correspondence we have from the New York Times, that is a possibility. I think that it's a viable theory to subscribe to. And it's possible that he felt his hands were tied because he himself said that he believed that Attorney General Loretta Lynch was essentially in Hillary Clinton's camp at the time. So I understand why he felt that his hands were tied. Doesn't excuse his actions on that. Now, on the October comments, even some Democrats, very few, but even some Democrats are saying he was stuck in an impossible situation where there were no good options. They may not have agreed with his decision, but they agree that that was a tough decision for anybody to make. I think he did the right thing in an impossible situation. He was going to be thrown to the lions regardless of what he did in that situation. So if you're asking me to sum up, and we're going to go to a break here and then take your calls here in a second. If you're going to sum up my thoughts on FBI Director James Comey, I think he was certainly an imperfect person, but I think he was a good FBI director. I think that even though he didn't always succeed, he was doing the best that he could to keep the FBI out of politics, to keep the FBI clean and reputable. Unfortunately, he failed in that, which I don't, you know, we can debate whether or not that was because of him or because of the deck of cards that he was handed to play with. I don't know. But I think that he was ousted because he ticked people off on both sides by doing his job. And I kind of liked the fact that neither side could decide whether or not they liked him or not, because especially when you're in a law enforcement role and you're supposed to be a watchdog, ticking people off on both sides is probably an indication that you're doing your job. And I should know. So that being said, sometimes when you stand in the middle, you wind up dying because of the crossfire. And I think that's what happened to James Comey. Your thoughts and calls, 860-1440. We'll be back.
You know he knows just exactly what the facts is. This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
John 8:31 and 32. So Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed him, "If you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free."
Welcome back. You're listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440. And the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers, and if you do call in, you want to go on the air, you also have an opportunity to win a two-pack of the Black Jacket Symphony, who will be playing right here September 16th at the Impact, just across the street from us practically. So you can go ahead and win some of those tickets. You can win them right here on News Radio 1440 before they're even on sale. You can win them by calling in right here at the Patriot Preacher. 860-1440 are the numbers. They will be performing Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club, a famous album by the Beatles. And so we're going to get to them in just a second. Did we lose our caller, Joe?
Well, it was when, and yeah, just I would say in the last 60 seconds, you were looking at a call.
I got you. Yeah, I was about to take it, but that's all right.
That was even after we came back from the break, so it wasn't like during the break. So maybe.
You know, he probably had some. That's the thing about our callers. Most of them, you know, have jobs and stuff, and so they.
Or
actually,
maybe they're driving, and if they're driving, certainly we don't.
Right, exactly.
Talking, but yeah, he'll call back.
No, yeah, well, maybe so. But if you do want to call in, you want to comment on some of the things I've talked about, great. Love to hear from you. And you also have a chance to win those tickets to the Black Jacket Symphony playing right here in Montgomery. Now, speaking of contests, I did want to bring this up because this is a great idea. We are offering a contest right now, and I'm going to explain it to you here in just a second. What would make your mom feel like the number one greatest mom? Trip to the spa, cleaning services for a year, an epic shopping spree, 1,000 bouquets of roses. In celebration of Mother's Day, we're giving you the chance to win $4,000 for mom by telling us what makes her great and what you would do for her if you won. Enter today at newsradio1440.com. Just tell us what you think makes your mom the greatest mom. And here's the thing, and this is why I'm encouraging people to do this. Obviously, you want to win. Obviously, you want to win that $4,000 prize. That's what you're gunning for. Yeah, do that, of course. But even if you don't win, you get brownie points. Because you write this thing up, save it in your computer, turn it into us, of course, but save a copy in your computer. And then when mom asks, hey, well, and don't get me wrong, get her something else if you don't win. I mean, be sure to get her something for Mother's Day. But after that, say, by the way, mom, I did enter you in this contest, and unfortunately it didn't win. You know, I'm not the best writer, but I did want you to have this. This is, I was telling people on the internet to enter this contest why I thought you were the best mom in the world. And so now you get brownie points with mom for that, regardless of whether you win or not. So guys, if you're out there, especially, I know that a lot of our audience is men. Ladies, of course, you can do this too. But if you want to earn brownie points with mom this Mother's Day, go ahead and enter that contest. And even if you don't win the big grand prize, you still win with mom. And that's what's important.
Well, if the $4,000 get right down to cases, who wins it? The person who submits or the mom?
Oh, well, the mom, I think the mom actually wins the shopping spree. I'm not sure exactly how that works. I leave that up to Kelly Stone over at the Fox. She runs all our promotions. I just tell people about it. That's all I am. I'm just the messenger. So that being said. Right. I don't know about the logistics of it. I know you go to newsradio1440.com to enter. That's all that I need to know.
And also that we are not eligible.
Right. I would do it for my mom, but unfortunately, I can't win the contest, so it doesn't do me any good. But anyway, there was another topic, and I am going to switch gears here for just a second. There was a story that I was going to do yesterday, but the Biscuits interrupted us and then wound up losing anyway after rudely interrupting us. No, I'm kidding. And
don't go there.
Right. I'm not going to bring that up. I'm not bitter about it, if you can't tell. By the way, speaking of that, before we move on, Joe Hunk, the program director of the program director of News Radio 1440 and the host of The Fallout on Sports Radio 740, I called into his show the other day, and he blames me for their loss because I left the game early, but let's not get into that right now.
I have some behind-the-scenes stuff, but it's fun.
Well, now, our 1440 producer, one of the ones who was doing the ball game yesterday, Michael Killer Kelly, was so confident that they were going to win that he wound up deleting the bottom of the ninth from the log because he was convinced the Biscuits wouldn't have to play the bottom of the ninth because they were ahead by so much so late in the game. And so I contend that it's Killer's fault. I think that he jinxed him. I think Joe's just trying to pass blame off onto me because I'm an easier target. But
I mean, there can be no doubt. I mean, he's sitting there, and I'm thinking, good. I get to go to lunch in just a minute. The game's going to be over, and
that's not what happened.
Not only was it not over, the wrong team. I mean, if the Biscuits had hit a game-winning grand slam, and the game kept going on, that's one thing.
Right, but that's not what happened. The Chattanooga Lookouts, now we're split. We have 1-1. We're going to try to win tonight at the big crawfish boil. We're going
to
try to
beat our
rivals.
I have to say one other
rivals.
Thing. Chris Adams-Wall, the play-by-play guy.
Right.
Now, he's a little complicit, too. Now, he started talking all about how, oh, well, we're only going to be 2 games out now. Then we're going on this road trip at Tennessee. We have a chance to win 3. We might come back in first place.
In other words, there's plenty of blame to go around.
Yeah, just listen to Kenny Rogers and the Gambler. You'll have to start counting.
A lesson to everyone in all of this is don't count your chickens before they hatch, because that's the commonality between all of us there that are quote-unquote to blame.
Yeah, we're going to bronze this game for that example.
Right, but I did want to talk about something serious here, and actually, again, I wanted to cover this yesterday, but the Biscuits preempted us, which is fine. It's part of being a team player, and, I hate that I didn't get to it, but I'm glad that I have an opportunity to talk to you about it today. there was a middle school in Trenton, Ohio, where a boy has been suspended for 10 days because he liked a picture of a gun. Now, we all remember the story that I covered. I brought the mother of the girl in here, the girl that was expelled for having a water pistol on campus. That's ridiculous enough. And don't get me wrong, that was wrong. I'm not trying to make excuses. But this isn't even bringing a toy gun to school. This is liking a picture of a gun, and it didn't even happen on school property. It's 8 p.m. This kid's looking at Instagram in his own room at his own house and likes a picture of a gun, and they suspend the kid for 10 days. Have we lost our freaking minds? I just can't get over. Now, the charge, and this is, I'm not making this up, I'm not editing the wording at all. This is a direct quote from the charge that came from the school board in Trenton, Ohio. The charge was liking a post on social media that indicated potential school violence. So now apparently just appreciating a picture of a gun is enough for them to suspect that you're going to hurt the students at their school. This is where we're going to. And all he did was like a picture of the gun on Instagram. It's his personal account. It's not like he was doing it as a, I don't know, the school vice president or using one of the school's accounts or anything like that. He's just sitting there in his room, sees a picture of a gun. Hey, I like that. Clicks the like button, doesn't share, doesn't comment, doesn't make a threat, doesn't show it to his buddies. All he does is likes a picture of a gun. Well, you can't like pictures of guns. We're going to have to discipline you for that. That's all he did. And they suspend the poor kid for 10 days after that. And you really want to make your eyes bleed. It's not even a real gun. It's an airsoft pistol. It shoots BBs. So the gun can't even really hurt anybody. I mean, if you've ever been pegged by an airsoft gun, it stings a little, but it certainly doesn't kill you. I lived in a fraternity house. Believe me, I've been shot by quite a few airsoft guns, and I survived. But anyway, not making light of that, just saying that we shot each other with airsoft guns quite a lot at the Alpha Kappa Lambda fraternity house. But anyway, so this was, and I do want to bring this up. When we're talking about this, what we've done is we've made even liking a gun into the crime. You're not even allowed to look at pictures of guns without being accused of school violence. I know that this is something that I suffer from. Now, granted, this is a different situation. I'm not trying to say it's a one-to-one comparison. But I know people that have known me for months, years, that never knew that I carried a pistol. And when they find out that I do, it changes their opinion of me. And they think that, you know, maybe I'm not going to name names or anything, but there are certain people that I've known that didn't know that I carried with me every single day, had no idea that I happen to have a pistol on me, that I'm armed. And when they find out, they freak out. I'm like, well, I didn't change. I've had a pistol the entire time. If I was going to do something, I would have done it by now. But when they find that out, it changes their opinion of me. And this is a natural side effect, and I'm going to get into how all this works here when we come back from the break. This is a natural side effect of making gun violence and gun crimes about the gun and not the person. We look at the gun as the problem, not the person. And so we're not considering whether the person is good or not. All we're seeing is gun, and we freak out. And so that's the problem as I see it. We're going to talk about this, talk about how they got here, give a little bit of the timeline when we come back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
A watchful eye must be kept on ourselves, lest, while we're building ideal monuments of renown and bliss here, we neglect to have our names enrolled in the annals of heaven. James Madison.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and News Radio 1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. Now, we've been talking about this case from Trenton, Ohio, where a kid literally just likes a picture of an airsoft gun, not even a real gun, just likes a picture of an airsoft gun, and it becomes this big federal case. And I want to go ahead and just parse through the logic here, because according to the school board, they saw this as a threat of potential school violence is coming directly from them. That's the quote in the charge that they made. So they believe that because he liked a picture of a gun at his own house, on his own personal time, on his own personal Instagram account, that he's a threat to the safety of the school. Now, what happened is he gets to school the next day. Remember, about 8 o'clock that night, likes a picture of a gun, doesn't think anything else about it, gets to school the next morning. Soon as he got to school, they call him to the principal's office and they search him. So they pat the kid down, convinced that he's going to do something because he liked a picture of a gun. Now, let me just kind of go through, because I think it's important in these situations to try to get into the mind of these people. This principal thinks that this kid's master plan was to kick off a school shooting spree by liking a picture of a gun. That's this kid's master plan, and that merits searching the kid and frisking him because he's a potential danger to himself and everybody there. We're dealing with a criminal mastermind here. This kid was like, not only am I going to go on a shooting spree, but I'm going to like a picture of an airsoft gun the night before to announce it. These people are outside of their ever-loving mind. It reminds me of, there's a very early episode of the Andy Griffith Show where they have a guy who is, they have a manhunt for this guy who's an escaped convict, and he gets loose right around the area of Mayberry, and they have all these state officials come down. They do this massive manhunt. They're searching for him. And then Andy and Barney, to help out, they're setting up checkpoints to check everybody that comes by. And Barney takes it upon himself to frisk everybody, regardless of who they are, even if he knows the guy. And so it has this little montage going through where Barney Fife is frisking down the mayor, the preacher of the local church, a little old woman, Emma, who is a recurring character on the show. She's about 1,000 years old, kind of looks like Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He's patting her down, too, because apparently she's a threat. Our schools have turned into Barney Fife, to where every little thing is a threat. Everything has to be taken seriously and get blown out of proportion. Now, it's just the level of ridiculousness is hard to fathom. Now, on Friday, the school board sent this letter out to parents in an email. Yesterday evening, school officials were made aware to an alleged threat of a student bringing a gun to school. We acted on this potential threat to a student's safety swiftly and with the utmost importance. This morning, the alleged threat was addressed, and we can assure you that all students at Edgewood Middle School are safe and the school will continue as normal. Thank you. Well, all that did was scare parents. This was the biggest this should have been the biggest non-story in the world. Because, granted, I've never been a principal. I've lived around teachers my whole life. I know more about the school system than the average person. Probably not as much as someone who was an actual teacher, but definitely more than the average person. Because I've just grew up around it. I lived around it. I got to believe that any of the principals that I had, even the ones that I didn't like and I did think were kind of drama queens and blew things out of proportion, you come to them with a story of, hey, there's this kid that goes to our school that liked a picture of a gun last night. He says, get out of my office. That's ridiculous. There's no reason to pursue that any further. And here's where I want to go with this, because I think that this is a natural reaction to the culture that we've made up, to where even liking a gun is toxic. Because what we have done now is we have made liking a gun, being a gun enthusiast, a thought crime. We're now policing what you think. We're policing what you like. We're policing your preferences. We're policing your hobbies. Because just because you happen to like guns, which I know that there's a lot of people in my audience that do, and I'm one of them, just because you like a gun, all of a sudden you're dangerous now. Whether or not you use them incorrectly is really immaterial. The fact that you like guns, have pictures of guns. We talked about not only the girl, Lainey, who we had her mom on the show just a little while ago, with she got expelled, kicked out of school completely for an entire year for having a water pistol on campus. We've had kids thrown out of school for the Pop-Tart kid biting his Pop-Tart into the shape of a gun and pointing it at people. He gets thrown out. We have the guy who, 15-year-old kid, he had an NRA shirt on, had a picture of an AR-15. They sent the kid home because they thought he was dangerous for having a picture of a gun. We've made anything even remotely associated with firearms dangerous because we've made the gun itself dangerous, not the person. We don't ask the question about the person anymore. The gun is what makes you dangerous. The gun is what kills people, not the person shooting the gun itself. And so that's the this is a natural reaction to that line of thinking. Because if you make gun, or what a lot of liberals will refer to as quote unquote gun culture, the problem, if you make that what is the thing to be feared, not the person itself, well, then who the person is really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that this kid has no record of doing anything bad or untoward towards anybody. Like I just gave the example beforehand, it doesn't matter that I had been working at the place that in the story that I was referencing where someone freaked out about me having a firearm on me. It didn't matter that I'd been working here for several months and never done anything or been anything but friendly and kind to everyone at that workplace. That doesn't matter to them. And so it's not the person, it's the firearm itself. And the reason that that's such flawed logic is because really anything can be used as a weapon. I mean, before guns, we had knives, swords, axes. It's not the object itself, it's the person. There is no inherent evil in a gun. I can guarantee you, because it sleeps next to my head every single night, my gun has never got up in the middle of the night and shot me.
Now, you better make sure that it's everything's okay and that it's not going to go off.
Well, of course. I mean,
I'm half kidding, but
I pointed away from myself. I put the safety on. I'm a responsible gun owner. I understand all that. But I have it next to my bed just in case. Well, first of all, just because it's an easy place to put it and remember where it is. But also, just in case something happens and I have to use it in the middle of the night, you know, my house gets broken into or something, that I'm nearby. Which, by the way, there's also a shotgun at the foot of my bed, so I'm pretty well covered. But anyway,
I'm going to stay away.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as long as you're not coming into my house in the middle of the night through a window, you have nothing to worry about. But anyway,
I have no plans, not in the near future.
But my point in all of that is just to say what we have done is we're becoming the thought police. It's not enough to just say you can't have a gun on school, which I understand that policy, at least for the students. I don't see why teachers wouldn't be allowed to carry if there are certain safety precautions put in place. But now we're going to the point to where you can't even on your own time, even on your own social media accounts, you're not even allowed to like guns. If you like guns, you're a threat. If you like guns, you're part of the problem. If you are a gun enthusiast, if you're a gun collector, if your family has guns, then you're to be treated with disdain because you're dangerous. It's not the gun. I also collect swords. I'm not going to go Samurai Jack on somebody just because I happen to have several katanas. And so what we've done is we've made evil society and we've made the thing itself evil. We never asked the question about the person. Now, even if this kid's never liked a picture of a gun, never talked about guns, we have no reason to believe he likes guns. If he makes a threat against another student, whether he threatens with a gun or not, that ought to be taken seriously because that's making the issue about the person. We're not doing that anymore. We're making the issue the gun itself. Because I got to tell you, kids threaten other kids at school all the time, and I've seen it time and time again, different schools, different school systems, where they don't do a dang thing about it. And then somebody winds up getting hurt, and they look stupid for doing that. Why don't we worry about the kid? Why don't we worry about the person, not worry so much about the inanimate object that can't do anything on its own? That's where we need to put our focus on, because I want kids to be safe. Everyone wants kids to be safe at school. I don't know a single person that doesn't. But if we want to make them safe, the way to do that is not police their thoughts and police what they like. The way to do that is to develop the people, develop the kids, and, you know, hopefully be a good influence over them. And if someone threatens them, if somebody threatens the school, if they make those allegations towards somebody, then, you know, that needs to be taken seriously. But let's make it about the person and their decisions, not the gun itself. All right. Just my thoughts on that. Star Spangled Sermon coming up next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Philippians 1:21. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Now, thinking about, we've done so many things here in recent history in this country that I think, though maybe not exclusive, could be tied back to our lack of knowledge on history. And one of the reasons that I bring that up is because this is not a new problem. Like so many problems that we have in our society today, right now, they were having similar problems way back in the day. In the time of Christ, this was also a problem. Even some people knew their history, but were arrogant enough to not understand that it could repeat itself. And unfortunately, I think that we fall into that trap a lot of times as well. Let's look at Matthew 23, 29 through 33. This is Jesus speaking directly to the Pharisees. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous, and say, if we had been living in these days of our fathers, we would not have been partners with them in shedding the blood of the prophets. So you testify against yourselves that you are the sons of those who murdered the prophets. Fill up then the measure of the guilt of your fathers. You serpents, you brood of vipers, how will you escape the sentence of hell? Pretty strong language from the most merciful man who ever lived. I think it's really interesting that he brings up that the Pharisees that he's talking about said specifically, if we had been living in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partners with them in shedding the blood of the prophets. So what Christ is alleging, and that's what they were saying at the time, is that you people are so convinced that you're in the right, so convinced that the mistakes that happened in the past can never repeat themselves, that you're not the same as them, that you just assume that you'll never do something similar. And what's ironic, and of course with hindsight we can see this, is that those Pharisees are the same people who eventually wound up calling for Christ to be crucified. They were standing there in real time as it happened, calling for the death of a prophet, even though they had spent their whole lives saying, well, we wouldn't have been a part of what our fathers were involved in, killing prophets. We wouldn't have done that. But they did. And they did it not long after this lesson that Christ is giving, because this is in Matthew 23. Chronologically, it's not that far from him coming back to Jerusalem and being crucified. See, Christ was foreshadowing his own death here. He knew that they were still involved in exactly the same thing that generations prior to them were. And why? Because either they didn't know their history well enough, or they knew it and were so arrogant they were convinced that it couldn't repeat itself. I was listening to a interview not long ago, and I didn't do a whole story on this just because we had already talked about it previously. Condoleezza Rice was talking about removing monuments when it came to what was going on in New Orleans with them taking away Confederate monuments, taking them out of the public sector. And she said, sanitizing history to make yourself feel better is a bad thing. And I couldn't agree more. Now, regardless of how you feel about the Civil War, the Confederacy, whatever, I want you to take that and take that emotion out of it for a second, whether you were a big fan of it or whether you hated it. Look at this and the warning that Christ is giving into the Scripture. Because I think everyone could agree with the Civil War, regardless of where you, what you thought about it, mistakes were made. A lot of mistakes were made. And the reason that the Civil War itself came about was a mistake in and of itself. So Jesus is warning them, warning the Pharisees here, that pride had blinded them to what was literally sitting right in front of them. And they had. They were looking at a prophet, thinking about killing him, while simultaneously saying, if we had been alive in the time of our fathers, we wouldn't have hurt the prophets. We would have been on the prophet's side. And so they were repeating history and not even realizing they were doing it. They made the error of thinking that it could never happen to them. One of the things that I advocate for is keeping history right in front of our face, because we need those historical lessons, especially the ones that make us uncomfortable, especially the ones that we maybe have some problems with, because it reminds us that good people, people that think that they're doing right at least, can make a terrible error because of, you know, untold different factors, whether it's just the culture of the time, whether it's mob mentality, regardless of what it is, they can make stupid, bad decisions and go along with great evil because they haven't learned their history and they haven't anchored themselves to the truth, anchored themselves to righteousness and the teachings of the gospel. You see, what Christ was doing, it was a warning of love against an error that they didn't have to commit. He didn't want them to commit this error. He didn't want them to be involved in this sin. And so he was using the strong language, essentially begging them not to go through with it. And if you don't believe me, if you don't believe that we can fall prey to the same problem, abortion has killed 58 million people since Roe v. Wade passed. The Holocaust killed 6 million. Frankly, we make the Nazis look like amateurs. Just something to consider. We'll be back tomorrow. Stay the course, friends. Live right now. Yeah, just be yourself. It doesn't matter if it's good enough for someone else. It just takes some time to build a girl in the middle of the ride to everything. The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.